I have already given away what we are doing in the sermon this morning. I know I might be odd, but I love commencement addresses. I mean, not all of them, but many of them. And so beginning in May, when commencements start all across the country, I like to pay attention to what people are saying. And as I was thinking about what to preach on today, knowing that some folks were going to be up at family camp, and I am also headed to family camp later, what I was thinking about was, you know, when Duke was here long ago and far away, he had something that he called the Now Testament. And it was not a Bible reading. It was a reading of a different sort. And so I've been thinking about that recently as we've been talking about the mission study and thinking about how there is also a now gospel. There is the gospel that is out there in the world. And so now and then it behooves us to stop and pay attention for a minute to how or if and whether our gospel and the world's gospel intersect at any points. So today I'm going to bring to you the now gospel, the gospel in the world, according to just a few people. I couldn't include everybody I wanted to. So I want you to know that I had to cut Barack Obama and Bill Cosby, much to my dismay, because they both had very interesting things to say. So I want to start with Fareed Zakaria. Some of you may know him as a journalist. He worked with Newsweek for about a decade, went on to Time magazine, and also has his own show on CNN. He graduated with his undergraduate degree from Yale, and this was a commencement speech that he was giving to Harvard. He got his PhD in political science from Harvard. So as he was speaking to them, he referred in the beginning of the speech to a commencement speech by Art Buchwald, where Art said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we are leaving you a perfect world. Now don't screw it up." And then Fareed went on to say, "You won't hear that anymore. You'll begin to hear immediately about all the troubles that are going on." And then this is what he said. He said, "You know, the world we live in is at peace. The major world powers are not at war with each other. You'd have to go back hundreds of years to find the same level of peace. The number of people who have died from war is down 50% from what it was in the 1990s, and 75% from the decades prior to that. The political stability has allowed for a single global economy, which has allowed countries all over the world to grow. Countries around the world are thriving and flourishing at a rate never known before. Poverty has been reduced more than in the previous 500 years. The average Chinese person is 5 times richer than 50 years ago and is living at least 10 years longer. A third of all babies born in the developing world this year will live to be 100. Cell phones have more computing power than the Apollo spaceship that went to the moon. The number of graduates globally has increased 4-fold for men and 7-fold for women. A world at peace and broader prosperity, and what he calls the rise of the rest, will benefit America. There is no Harvard in China or India, and there may not be for decades, if ever. We add 3 million people to this country every year. That adds a vital life force. I would rather have America's problems than most any other country in the world. When I say we are living in a time of astonishing progress, I am not urging complacency. human action and human achievement have taken on terrible human problems. It's easy to map out the big problems. It's harder to map out the individual responses that, in cooperation with others, will help provide solutions. And then he left them with this piece of advice. Human beings will continue to reward talents of the heart and mind that have been rewarded for thousands of years. Intelligence, discipline, hard work, love, and faith. Trust yourself. You know what kind of life you should live. Trust your instinct. The second one was actually a baccalaureate speech, so I'm cheating just a little bit, to Princeton University. It was by Michael Lewis, who you might know as the author of Moneyball and The Blind Side and other things. He begins his speech by saying that he was an art history major, and so when he graduated, he had zero earning power whatsoever, which was important for the setup. Then he tells this story. One night, I was invited to a dinner where I sat next to the wife of a big shot at a giant Wall Street investment bank called Salomon Brothers. She more or less forced her husband to give me a job. I knew next to nothing about Salomon Brothers, but Salomon Brothers happened to be where Wall Street was being reinvented, into the place we have all come to know and love. When I got there, I was assigned, almost arbitrarily, to the very best job in which to observe the growing madness. They turned me into the house expert on derivatives. A year and a half later, Salomon Brothers was handing me a check for hundreds of thousands of dollars to give advice about derivatives to professional investors. He then goes on to say how he quit Salomon Brothers to write, much to his parents' dismay. And then he says, I live in Berkeley. And he went on to talk about a Berkeley experiment that was done of putting three people in a room, designated one the leader, and then bringing four cookies into the room on a plate. Each person took a cookie, and the designated leader ate the extra cookie with gusto, believing he or she deserved every crumb of it. He went on to say this to the graduating class. This leader had performed no special task. He had no special virtue. He'd been chosen at random 30 minutes earlier. His status was nothing but luck. But it still left him with the sense that the cookie should be his. This experiment helps to explain Wall Street bonuses and CEO pay, and I'm sure lots of other human behavior. But it is also relevant to new graduates of Princeton University. In a general sort of way, you have been appointed the leader of the group. Your appointment may not be entirely arbitrary, but you must sense its arbitrary aspect. You are the lucky few, lucky in your parents, lucky in your country, lucky that a place like Princeton exists that can take in lucky people, introduce them to other lucky people, and increase their chances of becoming even luckier. Lucky that you live in the richest society the world has ever seen, in a time when no one actually expects you to sacrifice your interests to anything. All of you have been faced with the extra cookie. All of you will be faced with many more of them. In time, you will find it easy to assume that you deserve the extra cookie. For all I know, you may. But you'll be happier, and the world will be better off if you at least pretend that you don't. never forget, in the nation's service, in the service of all nations. Then the next one was by an author I had not heard of, I'm embarrassed to say. My daughters both looked at me like I was crazy. They instantly knew who he was. He's an English author by the name of Neil Gaiman, G-A-I-M-A-N. He was speaking to the graduating class of the University of the Arts. So they were all kinds of arts majors. He said to them, "I made a list when I was 15 of everything I wanted to do. I didn't have a career plan. I just did everything on the list." If you, and this is not all in order. It's all smooshed together. If you have an idea of what you want to make, the kind of art, and what you were put here for, just go and do it. Normally, there are things you have to do before you get to the place you want to be. I wanted to write books and comics, and I became a journalist in order to get there. Sometimes the way to do what you hope to do is clear, but sometimes it's hard to know. Something that worked for me was imagining that where I wanted to be, an author making good books and comics and drama, I would imagine that place was a mountain, a distant mountain, and I knew that as long as I was walking toward the mountain, I would be okay. I would say yes to anything that meant I was still walking to the mountain. I said no to anything that would take me away from the mountain. And then he said, "You're going to need some secret freelance knowledge. People get hired because somehow they get hired. When I was in job interviews and people asked who I had written for in the days before the internet, I lied. But I then made it a point of honor to write something for each of the magazines I had listed." In that way, it wasn't that I was lying, it was just that I was a little chronologically challenged. You get work, however you get work, but you keep working for three reasons. The work is good, you're easy to get along with, and you deliver the work on time. And actually, you can get away with two out of the three, no matter what the combination. He said, "The best piece of advice I've ever been given was from Stephen King. Stephen King told me, you should enjoy it." I didn't. Instead, I worried about it. The next story, the next deadline. I didn't stop and enjoy how fun it was because I was too worried. To let go and enjoy the ride was the hardest part for me. I wish you luck. You will discover that the harder and wiser you work, the more luck you will have. But there is luck. Go and make interesting mistakes, make amazing mistakes, make glorious and fantastic mistakes, break rules, leave the world a more interesting place for your having been here. Make good art. And then this is the final one. And if you haven't seen this on YouTube, I encourage you to get on and watch this one. This is by David McCullough Jr. He's an English high school teacher at Wellesley High School in Massachusetts. And he's been written up and it's getting all kinds of views because he spends a lot of time telling the graduating class that they're not special, which, as you can imagine, really irks all the parents sitting there who think their children are very special. And so this is some of what he said to the graduating class. Now remember, he's an English teacher, so there was no way I was going to try to paraphrase. He writes every word specifically. "In our unspoken but not so subtle Darwinian competition with one another, which springs, I think, from our fear of our own insignificance, a subset of our dread of mortality, we have of late, we Americans, to our detriment, come to love accolades more than genuine achievement. We have come to see them as the point, and we're happy to compromise standards or ignore reality if we suspect that's the quickest way or only way to have something to put on the mantelpiece, something to pose with, crow about, something with which to leverage ourselves into a better spot on the totem pole. No longer is it how you play the game. No longer is it even whether you win or lose, or learn or grow, or enjoy yourself doing it. Now it's, so what does this get me? As a consequence, we cheapen worthy endeavors, and building a Guatemalan medical clinic becomes more about the application to Bowdoin than the well-being of Guatemalans. Do whatever you do for no reason other than you love it and believe in its importance. Don't bother with work you don't believe in any more than you would a spouse you're not crazy about, lest you find yourself on the wrong side of a Baltimore Orioles comparison. Resist the easy comforts of complacency, the specious glitter of materialism, the narcotic paralysis of self-satisfaction. Be worthy of your advantages and read, read all the time. Read as a matter of principle, as a matter of self-respect. Read as a nourishing staple of life. Develop and protect a moral sensibility and demonstrate the character to apply it. Dream big, work hard, think for yourself, love everything you love, everyone you love with all your might. Don't wait for inspiration or passion to find you. Get up, get out, explore, find it yourself, and grab hold with both hands. Now, this next part is going to date most of us, but you'll get it by the end. Now, before you dash off and get your YOLO tattoo, let me point out the illogic of that trendy little expression. Because you can and should live not merely once, but every day of your life. Rather than you only live once, YOLO, it should be you live only once. Wailu doesn't have the same ring to it, so we shrug and we decide it doesn't matter. And these were his closing words. Let me just back up for a second. The YOLO thing is a really big expression right now with younger generations. You only live once are the words you say in order to justify whatever crazy thing you're about to do. He's suggesting it should be, you live only once. So, countercultural. Here are his closing words and our closing words. Climb the mountain not to plant your flag, but to embrace the challenge. Enjoy the air and behold the view. Climb it so you can see the world, not so the world can see you. Go to Paris to be in Paris, not to cross it off your list and congratulate yourself for being worldly. Exercise free will and creative independent thought, not for the satisfactions they will bring you, but for the good they will do others, the rest of the 6.8 billion, and those who will follow them. And then you too will discover the great and curious truth of the human experience. The great and curious truth of the human experience is that selflessness is the best thing you can do for yourself. Selflessness is the best thing you can do for yourself. Amen.